Ah, Vanity Fair, where wishes are granted too late, and a marvellous piece of good fortune must be declined.
Oh, Sir Pitt, please, no more.
Why ever not?
Because I can't marry you. I'm married already.
You're making fun of me, Becky Sharp. Who'd ever marry you without a shilling to your fortune?
Dear Sir Pitt, do not think me ungrateful.
Gratitude be hanged. Who are you married to? Where was it?
No matter. Pray don't tell Miss Crawley, sir. Just let me come back with you to the country. Don't separate me from dear Queen's Crawley.
Oh, I see. The fellow's left you, has he? Well, you can't have your cake and eat it, but you can still come back as governess. Have it all your own way.
Oh, sir, it would be the pride of my life to go back and take care of the children and of you as formerly. Indeed, if I can't be your wife, sir, let me be your daughter. Mm. Let me...
But as Becky kneels fetchingly before Sir Pitt, his sister and Becky's benefactor, Miss Crawley, sails in.
Miss Briggs informed me that you were on your knees, Sir Pitt. But it seems it's the lady on the ground, not the gentleman.
I was thanking Sir Pitt, ma'am, while telling him that I can never become Lady Crawley.
You've refused him?
Indeed, she has.
I'm glad you think it good sport, brother. It doesn't seem to break your heart at any rate.
Not a bit. Who'd have thought it?
Who'd have thought what?
You don't know, do you? What a little fox you are, Becky. You can come back to Queen's Crawley whenever you wish.
Refuse Sir Pitt, but still willing to return to Queen's Crawley. I think I need a little restorative after all this mystery brings.
Indeed, ma'am. There must be some previous attachment, ma'am, we know nothing of. After all, even I was in love with a writing master who wrote such beautiful, unintelligible letters.
Oh, please don't cry, Briggs. It won't bring him back. You've got a lock of his hair somewhere. What more do you want? Still, you're right. Becky has been silly and sentimental. Some apothecary or house steward or painter or young curate or something of the sort. Find out who the objet is, Briggs, and I'll set him up in a shop or order my portrait of him, and I'll give Becky a dowry. And we'll have a wedding, Briggs.
Oh.
And you'll make the breakfast and be a bridesmaid.
Oh, yes, I'll find out all I can, Mum, for truly you are all kindness.
But the mystery is so delicious that Miss Crawley cannot wait for Briggs to find out the truth.
Now, Becky, dear, I understand all you say about the unsuitability of my brother as a husband, but you'd never have refused him if there hadn't been someone else. Someone who has already touched your heart?
Ah, I fear you've guessed aright, dear lady.
Tell me all, and let me console you.
I wish I could, dear madam, but please don't ask me now. You shall know all soon, dear kind Miss Crawley, dear friend, may I call you?
Of course you may.
Oh, God bless you. I can't tell you now, but, oh, love me always. Promise you will.
Rebecca knows she could have been Lady Crawley. She's fond enough of her new husband, but if only she could have guessed Sir Pitt's wife would die so soon, she could have had a title. But she is not one to waste her energies for long on useless regrets.
Your father knows I'm married, Rawdon, but not who to. I've promised to return to Queen's Crawley when I can, so that should keep him quiet for a while, but the truth is going to come out sooner or later.
And I'll be damned glad when it does. I want everyone to know how happy you've made me. No regrets, eh?
Of course not, my love.
So, if the cat is to come out of the bag, then tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Well, we know that Miss Crawley is going to be upset at first, but you're her favourite nephew. She's forgiven you a great deal in the past.
What's more, she's always said birth and wealth don't matter to her.
Mm.
She's also damned fond of you, and who can blame her?
Rawdon, pay attention. I want you to go and hire some quiet lodgings near your barracks in the name of Captain and Mrs. Crawley.
And you're going to join me there?
Of course. course.
Oh, you little beauty. How long I've waited for this.
Rawdon, please, someone will see us.
Well, let them.
The safest move is to flee. That'll give time for the dust to settle and your aunt to miss us. God knows, we're the only relative she has with a spark of liveliness. But in the meantime, she must get to hear our side of the story somehow.
So how do we manage that?
Through dear, silly, sentimental Miss Briggs.
Dear Miss Briggs, the kindest heart in the world as yours is, will excuse me. Claims even superior to those of my benefactress call me hence. I go to my duty, to my husband. I am wedded to the best and most generous of men. Miss Crawley's Rawdon is my Rawdon.
At his command, I follow him to our humble home as I would through the world. Oh, my excellent and kind friend, intercede with my Rawdon's beloved aunt for him and the poor girl to whom all his noble race have shown such unparalleled affection. Ask Miss Crawley to receive her children. All the time, behind my back, my darlings were planning this, deliberately deceiving me. You're in the plot too, aren't you, Briggs?
No.
Oh, yes, you made him marry her, thinking I'd leave my money to him. Don't think I can't see through all this.
But Mum, I wouldn't ask a member of this family to marry a girl whose mother was a dancer.
Oh, so now you're throwing that in my face.
But you knew that Rebecca's...
That doesn't mean she can be Rawdon's wife. I had plans for him, hopes for him, my lovely, wicked boy. I believe in equality, but equality has its limits. What is worse, they hid all this from me, laughed at me behind my back. It's unforgivable.
So, where's Becky? Is she ready to come with me to Queen's Crawley?
Brother, do you know what she has done?
What now?
She has married your son.
My?
She has married Rawdon, and she is the daughter of a nobody.
Rawdon? He's got a... That tempting little piece. I'll tear his heart out, the scoundrel. And as for her, she told me she'd come back to Queen's Crawley. I'll show her what it means to make fun of me.
But they are in love.
What has that got to do with it? Oh, my goodness. I feel one of my attacks.
Dear Matilda.
Coming on.
Matilda. Matilda.
I say, Becky.
What, my love?
It's damned cosy here, but suppose the old lady don't come round?
She will.
But, I mean, the butler denies me the door. My letters are sent back. And Aunt Matilda never stirs out of the house.
Don't worry, I'll make your fortune anyway.
I'm sure you're clever enough.
Of course, I'd much prefer it if Mrs. Bute Crawley hadn't decided to pay a visit. She'll fill the old lady's ears with all sorts of poison against us. But life with Mrs. Bute and Miss Briggs will be so very, very dull. No French... No cards, no scandal. She'll be begging us on bended knees to return.
Becky, you've brains enough for both of us. You know what the fellows in the regiment say?
They want me for colonel.
No. They say I'm turning into a happy married man. And damn me, I think I am.
Is there anything interesting in the paper?
Indeed, there is. The news that Amelia's father, old John Sedley, is a ruined man. His name has been proclaimed as a defaulter on the stock exchange, and his bankruptcy and commercial extermination have followed.
Lot number 369, portrait of a portly gentleman on the Hellevant. All bid for Mr. Joseph Sedley on the Hellevant. Lift up a picture, Blyman, let the company examine this lot.
The Sedleys have left Russell Square. The vultures have descended, and everything is up for sale.
Shall we say 20 guineas for this work of art? 15? 5? Surely the fat gentleman, even without the elephant, is worth somebody £5. Now, come on, gentlemen. Don't keep me here all day.
You know, Rawdon, it's hard to remember what this house was like when I came here to stay with Amelia as a mere nobody.
Not quieter, I'll be bound.
I was just a governess. He was a kind enough old man, Mr. Sedley. I'm sorry he's gone wrong.
Oh, stockbrokers, bankrupts, used to it, you know. I say, Becky, there's the auctioneer fellow. Yes, they're bringing your piano down now.
It's not mine till we've bought it. Till then, it's still Amelia's.
A lot free, 7-1, gentlemen. A small Broadwood piano in excellent condition, formerly the property of the young lady of the house.
I remember Amelia showing it off to me.
And now, what am I bid?
Go on.
No. Five guineas.
Five guineas from the military gentleman. Any advance? Do I have 10 guineas from the gentleman at the back?
Somebody else is after it.
15 guineas.
15 guineas. Any advance? All 20 guineas over there.
22 guineas.
Any advance? Oh, 25 guineas from the gentleman at the back.
25 guineas? I won't let you bid on. Let him have it.
Sold for 25 guineas to the gentleman.
Why, Rawdon, look. It's Captain Dobbin.
And indeed here is Captain Dobbin, the loyal friend of George Osborne, Amelia Sedley's betrothed, advancing to claim his prize in full view of the crowd.
Captain Dobbin! Captain Dobbin!
Oh, Miss Sharp. Or I believe that I should now say Mrs. Crawley.
The word is out, I see. And look, here is Captain Crawley himself.
Dobbin!
My congratulations to you both. And now, if you'll excuse me...
But you must tell me the news of poor dear Amelia.
The family's had to move, of course. They've gone to a small cottage just off the Fulham Road, belonging to a loyal servant of the firm.
How dreadful! How are they managing?
I believe you remember Amelia's brother Joseph?
Very well indeed.
He has arranged an annuity for his parents, so there's no present poverty to fear.
Nevertheless, it must be a bitter blow to darling Amelia. She's so unused to poverty.
Yes, but she has devoted herself to looking after her parents. She thinks so little about herself. I'm sure she'd like to see you.
Of course. We'll visit her just as soon as we can, won't we, Rawdon?
Oh, of course we will.
And what of George? Dear George?
He will, I'm sure, remain loyal to the engagement. Although his father, Mr. Osborne, has taken Mr. Sedley's fall from financial grace very badly. Now, if you'll excuse me.
By the by, I had no idea you were so musical, Captain Dobbin.
Me? Musical? I could no more play a piano than dance on the tightrope.
So the piano is not for your own personal use?
Why not? Well, yes, in a way. I just had a mind to buy it. It's a very fine piano. Goodbye, Mrs. Crawley, Captain Crawley.
Oh, it's as plain as a pikestaff.
What is?
He's bought the piano to give it back to Amelia.
Why'd the fellow do that?
Because he's in love with her, of course. But the ninny will send it anonymously because he wouldn't want her to guess the truth. Because he's also devoted to dear George.
Look, I know you think I'm a fool, Beck.
A very handsome, delightful fool.
But Dobbin's got it wrong. George Osborne is bound to cry off the wedding now the family's smashed. How cut up will your pretty little friend be if that happens, Becky?
Oh, I dare say she'll recover from it.
And so they drive on and start to talk about something else. Amelia's father, John Sedley, is ruined. His friends and business associates desert him like the true inhabitants of Vanity Fair they are.
George, you know what I'm going to say to you?
Yes, sir.
The dishonest and shameful conduct of Sedley in the management of his affairs has justly ruined him. There can be no doubt that you must give up all contact with his daughter.
But Amelia, sir, is
Amelia, sir, is his daughter. And an artful and conniving young woman who's tried to worm her way into your affections and the family's fortune.
Sir, it was you who...
The connection is broken off forever. Forever! Do you hear? Well, of course, you'll need money, George, now you're made captain. Here, for your new clothes and the epaulettes. And to go out and enjoy yourself. After all, you may soon be on the march, I hear.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
For this is the month of March 1815. Napoleon has landed at Cannes, and Louis XVIII fled, and all Europe is in alarm. While Miss Amelia Sedley struggles to look after her ailing parents in their painfully reduced circumstances, and fears that George no longer cares for her as he once did. But then she receives an unexpected anonymous gift, the return of her very own piano.
Dear George.
What nonsense are you talking now?
George is so kind and so tactful. No note, nothing to say. This was his generous gift. But I know it was him, Father, and he still loves me.
Do you, Emmy? He's his father's son. When I think of all I did for Osborne. And now he shuns me. He knows he ought to help me. Friendship, honour, gratitude demand it. But instead, he's become my most savage and unyielding creditor.
But George isn't...
No power on earth would induce me to marry you to the son of such a villain. You must banish George from your mind.
Father, what are you asking of me?
I don't ask you to refuse the piano. But enough is enough. I want you to return all the presents and all the letters you've ever had from that young puppy.
Father!
Do as I say. Just do it, Emmy.
I will try, but I fear it will kill me to do it.
Don't be absurd.
Dearest George, my papa has ordered me to return to you these presents which you made to me in happier days, and I am to write to you for the last time. I know you feel the blow which has come upon us. I absolve you from an engagement which is impossible in our present misery.
What does she say?
She's sent back some things I gave her. Some damn trinkets. Seems it's all over.
Oh, but that's well,
look,
not...
William, you may read the note if you like. It says something at the end about playing upon my piano and how kind it was of me to send it. Not a damn clue what she's talking about.
Nor have I. But let me see what she says.
Of course, it is Captain Dobbin, Amelia's secret admirer, who has bought the piano for her, and Captain Dobbin, who has visited the Sedleys. And now it is Captain Dobbin who brings Amelia's note back to George.
There's no address. So where are they?
A small cottage off the Fulham Road. Amelia's brother Joss is supporting them.
Oh, no anxiety on that score, then. But how was she?
Oh, George, if you could have seen her when she handed that note over to me. She looked as if her heart was breaking.
Poor Emmy. I had no idea.
She loves you, George. I respect the two of you more than any two people in the world, and you were made for each other. How do you expect her to be?
I don't know. I suppose I thought she'd get over it. William, do you think I'm a terrible scoundrel in obeying my father and not going to see her? I can see the answer in your face.
Do you want me to talk to Mr. Sedley?
Will you?
Well, Captain Dobbin, this is to what I am reduced by way of an office. The Tapioca Coffee House in Coffin Court. What can I do for you?
I'm here on behalf...
Oh, no. First things first. You're a military man, so tell me. What's all this talk about Boney's return from Elba?
We're going to hunt Boney out, sir. The Duke of Wellington's in Belgium already, and we expect marching orders every day.
Well, give him no quarter. Shoot the coward down. I did list myself, but I'm a broken old man, ruined by Boney and that swindling old thief Osborne, who rolls around in his carriage now.
It's from George Osborne that I bear a message, sir. The quarrel between you and his father has cut him up a great deal.
Oh, that's your errand, is it? He's as big a villain as his father.
Forgive me, sir, but it's my belief that you have not the power or the right to separate George and Amelia. And if you don't give your daughter your consent, it will be her duty to marry without it.
What?
The true duty of a father and a gentleman is to allow something to go ahead to which he has given his consent. Of course, if Mr. Osborne continues to reject...
If he continues to oppose the match and they marry, then Osborne has either to accept my daughter as his or lose his son.
That was not exactly...
No, I understand. That's capital. Anything that pains Osborne is pleasure to me. Let the young man come.
And as the result of Dobbin's gallant efforts, unacknowledged as ever, George Osborne is persuaded to visit Amelia once more, and she is happy and content again.
You should have seen her dress for court, Emmy. Her diamonds blazed out like Vauxhall Gardens on the night we were there. She had earrings like chandeliers. You might have lighted them up, by Jove.
And this is the heiress your father intends for you to marry.
Well, she's good-natured enough, but, you know, I don't care tuppence for her. I feel ashamed in my father's great stupid parties. I've been accustomed to live with gentlemen and men of fashion and...
And?
Well, dear little Emmy, you're the only person of our set who ever looked or thought or spoke like a lady. And you do it because you're an angel and can't help it.
George, don't be absurd. I'm only...
Oh, no. Don't remonstrate. It's clear to me, seeing you again, you are the only true lady.
But there matters might have rested forever had it not been for the intervention of Mr. Osborne and George's pride.
George, your sister informs me that you have visited Miss Sedley. How dare you?
Why shouldn't I visit her? I say she is the best, the kindest, the gentlest, the sweetest girl in England.
I ask you, how dare you?
Please, don't keep saying dare, sir. Dare isn't a word to be used to a captain in the British Army.
I shall say what I like to my son, sir. My father didn't give me the advantages you've had, nor the money you've had. But it wasn't considered the part of a gentleman in my time for a man to insult his father.
I'm not insulting you, sir. I'm simply asking you to remember I'm a man of my word.
Well, I wish you'd remember other things as well, sir. For so long as you choose to honour us with your company, Captain, I'm the master, and the name of Miss Sedley, or any of the damn lot of them, shall not...
Our family has done her quite enough injury already, and may leave off reviling her now she's down. I'll shoot any man but you who says a word against her.
Go on, sir, go on.
Who told me to love Amelia in the first place? It was your doing. And now that her heart's mine, you give me orders to fling it away and punish her and... Kill her, perhaps, for the faults of other people.
I'm not going to have any of this damn sentimental nonsense and humbug here. There'll be no beggar marriages in my family. Will you do as I tell you once and for all, or will you not?
I'll do what I please.
George! George!
George, what's the matter? What's happened?
Damn him, Will. Damn him! I'll marry her tomorrow.
And so, one gusty, raw day at the end of April, that Don Juan of the regiment, Captain George Osborne, marries Amelia Sedley. William Dobbin is best man, and Joseph Sedley, fatter and more splendidly dressed than ever before, comes to town especially.
God bless you, Dobbin.
God bless you both.
Come down to Brighton as soon as you can.
I will, once I've settled your business here and spoken to your father.
I'm relying on you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Captain.
Captain Dobbin has no heart to go a-feasting with Joss Sedley. After all his efforts, it is all over. He thanks God they are finally married and happy. But never since he was a boy has he felt so miserable and lonely. The newlyweds, meanwhile, speed to Brighton. And who do they meet in the street there?
Amelia! Dear Amelia!
Rebecca!
Oh, I'd have known you anywhere.
And here is George. We're married.
My goodness. Who would have thought it after all that's happened? My congratulations to both of you.
Mrs. Crawley,
You know, Captain, I do believe I owe you an apology. I was very rude to it, Miss Crawley's, when we last met. I do hope you'll forgive me.
Of course he does. Don't you, George?
Indeed. especially since we're all married folk now. Where is Captain Crawley, by the way?
He's on a surveillance mission. His aunt has come down here for her health. She's still refusing to see Rawdon, but we live in hope. And how about you? What does Mr. Osborne think to the wedding?
We live in hope, too.
Mr. Osborne, I have been at the Horse Guards this morning, and there's no doubt that our regiment will be ordered abroad and on its way to Belgium before the week is over. And you know, sir, that we shan't be home again before a tussle which may prove fatal to many of us.
The regiment will do its duty, I dare say. I suppose no Briton's afraid of any damned Frenchman, eh?
No, sir, of course not. I only mean that if there are any differences between you and George, it would be as well, just in case something happened to him, that the two of you should shake hands.
You're a good fellow, William. Then we shouldn't part in anger, that's true. I've only his good at heart, and if he's prepared to change his tune, then I'll not be harsh upon him. Forget and forgive is what I say.
I'm afraid there is more, sir.
Oh?
It concerns a certain engagement into which your son had previously entered.
Well, surely you don't mean that swindling old bankrupt's out for a little daughter?
Sir, no man shall abuse that lady in my hearing. And if you knew, you would not say such things.
What the devil do you mean?
Mr. Osborne, you are insulting the best creature in the world. You had best spare her, sir, because she is your son's wife.
What?
They were married 5 days ago.
He has disobeyed my strictest orders. No!
He goes abroad.
There can be no going back now. This is beyond forgiveness. Tell him, I no longer have a son.
Sir, consider...
No, he is utterly disinherited. His name is erased from the family Bible. Tell him, live or die. I never want his name spoken to me again. Ever. Ever!
Burdened with disturbing news, Captain Dobbin takes the earliest possible coach to Brighton.
It must be such a blow to cut short your honeymoon, George.
But when do we leave? What's the news?
We embark next week. Napoleon could be upon us within the month. But I wouldn't mention too much to Miss Amelia, to Mrs. Osborne. I mean, many people think there mayn't be any fighting after all.
Agreed. But did you see my father?
Yes. He sent you this letter.
Huh? This isn't his handwriting.
It's his lawyer's.
In consequence of the marriage which you have pleased to contract, he ceases henceforth to consider you as a member of his family. Well, then it says that all I can have is the part of my late mother's estate, which is mine by right.
Best read to the end. I did my best, George.
He declines to receive any communications from me on this or any other subject. This determination is final and irrevocable.
I'm so sorry.
Well, a pretty way you've managed the affair. Why couldn't we have waited? A shot might have done for me in the course of the war, and how will Emmy be bettered by being left a beggar's widow? Oh, but you were never easy until you'd got me married and ruined.
Well, I've tried to apologize. I'm sorry, but you'll just have to live on your pay till your father relents. And if you die, you leave Amelia 100 a year.
How the deuce am I to keep up my position in the world on such paltry sums?
Some of us manage.
What choice do I have?
Your father can't be angry with you for long. Nobody could. And you know that for myself, I really don't care so long as we have each other.
Bless you, Emmy.
Besides, you say that your mother has left you £2,000. That sounds an immense deal of money to me, if we're prudent.
God preserve your innocence, Emmy. Now, I need to go.
Off to the Crawleys again?
I'm not getting dressed up for nothing. The waistcoat's very fine, isn't it?
Yes, but...
But what? The Crawleys are good company, and I fancy a game of cards.
George, I worry...
You can always come if you wish.
No. I've Take care of yourself. Give my best wishes to Becky.
Amelia looks at the great funereal damask pavilion that is her marital bed and longs for her own little room at home. She has only been married a week, and already George seems eager for the society of others. Captain Rawdon Crawley and his wife, meantime, sit on their Brighton balcony.
I say, Becky, what'll Mrs. O do when Giorgio goes out with the regiment?
Cry her eyes out.
Whereas you, I suppose, don't care a damn.
Don't be a wretch. You know very well that I intend to go with you. Besides, you're different. You go as General Tufto's aide-de-camp. And by the way, don't forget to collect the gambling debts off that silly young Cupid Georgie before he goes.
Is it likely I'd forget, given the state of our finances? Gad, you know, it's so damn frustrating. Here we are, living on credit, and there's Auntie just a few doors away, loaded with cash, and she won't even speak to me.
Don't despair just yet.
Oh?
The family have had it their own way so far, setting your aunt against you and your marriage, but they've overplayed their hand. Your aunt loves gossip and high living. She's not going to want to be a stay-at-home invalid forever if she can avoid it. Here she is, in Brighton, and she hardly ever goes out.
Worse luck.
But I'll tell you who does go out every day because she adores bathing.
Who?
Oh, I see it all with my telescope. Auntie's companion, Miss Briggs, of course. She's always had a soft spot for us.
And so, early one morning, as Miss Briggs emerges from her bathing machine after an invigorating swim, she sees a familiar face.
Oh, Miss Sharp! Mrs. Crawley.
Dear Miss Briggs, dear friend.
Well, I'm not sure that
but
I should
Miss Briggs,
be...
Arabella, I know that my marriage to Captain Crawley has displeased your mistress, but surely that is not a reason for us to be enemies.
Of course, I am fond of you, but I don't
but
think...
I know times have changed. I gather Mrs. Bute Crawley, Miss Crawley's sister-in-law, has control of the household now. No doubt she values you as I do.
Well, no, she doesn't. I'm constantly pushed away from my dear Matilda as if I didn't exist.
How kind of a vicar's wife to be so charitable.
And Matilda, Miss Crawley, is not at ease. She's concerned for her health, of course, always has been, but Mrs. Pugh lords it so. Dear Miss Crawley is so anxious. And so cowed and so unhappy.
How different when it was you and I, dear Arabella.
Indeed, indeed.
So where will it end?
Who can tell? But I can tell you, Mrs. Bute's husband has just fallen from his horse and broken his collarbone. She's going to have to return home.
Oh, dear. How very sad.
Brussels!
Brussels!
And victory.
Victory! Victory!
And death to Boney!
Death to Boney!
George, I'm sorry, but I had not fully understood.
Not understood what, my love?
The regiment is ordered away so soon.
I told you before, Emmy.
Yes, but...
It's only a 12-hour sea passage. Won't hurt anyone, will it, Mrs. Crawley?
Certainly won't hurt me, Captain Osborne. I have every intention of going, but then, of course, I'm practically on the staff. General Tufto is a great flirt of mine.
Yeah, capital fellow, and a good friend of mine, too.
No harm in you coming if you want, Emmy. Mrs. Crawley, yeah, can be a chaperone. Hmm?
Yes, but it's different for Mrs. Osborne.
Oh?
She's not used to. Well, just think of...
Well, Emmy?
Thank you, Captain Dobbin. But I must and I will go.
Bravo! Well said!
Bravo! Bravo! Who'd have thought she'd show so much spirit?
Later that evening, Captain and Mrs. Crawley plan another move in their very own military campaign.
Now, my dear, if you please, sit down at the writing table.
But, Becky...
I want you to pen me a pretty little letter to Miss Crawley.
Well, now?
Mrs. Bute is gone. This is our moment.
Ah, wait. Brighton. Thursday.
Very good.
My dear aunt
Becky, what am I supposed to say?
Before quitting the country and commencing a campaign which very possibly may be fatal.
Oh, well, fatal, eh? Oh, that's damned good. F-A-T-A-L,
fatal, which very possibly may be fatal. I beseech you before I go, once more, to let me press the hand from which I have received nothing but kindnesses.
Nothing but kindnesses. Damn me, Becky, this is good.
I ask nothing but that we should not part in anger. Leave your property, dear aunt, as you will. I shall never complain. I would have you believe that I love you for yourself and not for money's sake.
It's magnificent, quite magnificent.
Oh, isn't it?
Brick, you are a fool. Don't you see? Rawdon never wrote a word of this.
But he...
Rawdon never wrote anything without asking for money. And all his letters are full of bad spelling and dashes and bad grammar. It is that little serpent of a governess who rules him. They're all alike, my relatives. They hanker for my money and they all want me dead.
Oh, I'm sure that isn't true.
Of course, I don't mind seeing Rawdon. The company I have to endure now is so terribly dull.
Oh, dear.
Provided there is no scene, why shouldn't Rawdon and I meet? But human patience has its limits, and I respectfully decline to receive Mrs. Rawdon. Well, write and tell him, Briggs.
Goodbye, Amelia.
Goodbye.
See you in Brussels.
You know, Rawdon, I do believe she was getting a little jealous.
Oh?
Georgie enjoyed spending too much time with us.
Sure you don't mean with you?
It's you he gambles with.
Yes, and me he'll pay when he collects his mother's money.
Now, what did Briggs write exactly?
She said, I'd better be waiting on the cliff alone when Briggs takes Auntie out in her chair for air tomorrow morning.
And so Rawdon and his aunt are reunited. And Miss Crawley holds out a couple of fingers to him with as smiling and good-humoured an air as if they had met only the day before. And Rawdon turns as red as scarlet, so great is his rapture and his confusion.
Dear nephew, how delightful to see you once more.
And you, Auntie, Mom, and you.
You know, the old girl has always acted like a trump to me, and I felt damned odd about it.
But what happened?
I walked by the side of her... what do you call it? Her chair. And we talked about this and that.
And?
And we talked all the way back to her front door. And then old... whatever his name is, the butler, came to help her in. And I wanted to go in very much, but it...
But you didn't go in?
When it came to the point, I'm hanged if I wasn't afraid.
You ought to have gone in and never come out again, you fool!
Well, don't call me names. It's easy to be wise after the... what you call it?
Oh, well, I suppose it can't be helped. But, Rawdon, you must
remember... No, I'm sorry, my love, but I've had enough. I'm off to the billiard room.
Rawdon is getting very fat and old, Briggs. His nose has become red, and he's exceedingly coarse in appearance. His marriage to that woman has hopelessly vulgarised him.
Still, he was very affected by seeing you, Mum. And I'm sure when you remember that he is going to the field of danger...
How much money has he promised you, Briggs?
Oh, Mum, how can you think that your poor...
Oh, stop snivelling, woman. I want you to sit down. Blow your nose. Write a letter to Captain Crawley.
Yes, Mum.
Dear sir, say you are desired by Miss Crawley. No... by Miss Crawley's medical man to state...
Yes?
..that my health is such that all strong emotions will be dangerous in my present delicate condition, and that I must decline any family discussions or interviews whatever. Thank him for coming to Brighton and beg him not to stay any longer on my account.
Anything else?
Yes. Wish him bon voyage. And tell him if he takes the trouble to call on my lawyers, he'll find a communication there for him. That'll make him leave Brighton.
Very good, Mum.
Oh, and while you're about it, write a letter to Mrs. Bute Crawley and tell her she needn't to come back. I've had enough of her bullying. I won't be a slave in my own house.
Oh, they're there, Matilda.
They want me dead, all of them.
No.
They're only interested in my money. They all want me dead. They'd all kill me if they could.
No.
Back in London once more, Becky waits outside the offices of Miss Crawley's lawyers.
Well, what did they have to say?
By Jove, Becky. She's only given me £20.
£20? Just £20? Oh, Rawdon, if you could see your face.
It's not damned funny.
Oh, come on, Rawdon, cheer up. Brussels beckons. There'll be fortunes to be made or won or stolen. In the meantime, let us go and spend your inheritance. Let's be extravagant on £20.
It is May 1815, and the gallant British regiments are being transported across the Channel to face the threat of Napoleon. Meanwhile, Mr. Joseph Sedley travels in an ordinary packet boat to Ostend as escort to his newly married sister Amelia and the redoubtable Peggy O'Dowd. Major O'Dowd, it is said, goes in command of the regiment, and Peggy O'Dowd goes in command of him.
Are you not finding the sea a little rough, Mr. Sedley? You look on the greenish side. In fact, your face is becoming a match for your outfit.
No, Mrs. O'Dowd. I'm fine.
Well, as I was saying, my dear Amelia, it was my intention that your George should have married my own dear sister, Glorvina, who would have suited him entirely as a wife. But as he was engaged to yourself, why, I was determined to take you to my bosom and love you as one of the regimental family.
You've been very kind.
But then there's not a more united society in the service than ours. We all love each other. Even if that Mrs. Captain Majanus has the devil's tongue and would cheat her own mother at whist.
I suppose we all share the same worries and fears, don't we? What will happen when our dear husbands go out to fight?
But my dear Emmy, there's no need to be frightened on that score. Oh, the fact is, the Allies will be in Paris within 2 months, and then I'll take you to dine in the Palais Royal, by Jove. I tell you, there's no infantry in France can stand against Russian infantry, and when it comes to generals, Boney can't hold a candle to the Duke of Wellington.
You're sounding quite the soldier, Mr. Sedley. Aren't we lucky to have you? And now I come to think of it, I must introduce you to my sister Glorvina.
I'd be enchanted. Excuse me, I must go to my cabin.
Amelia is reunited with George in Brussels, which is one of the most brilliant little capitals in Europe. All the delights of Vanity Fair are on offer here, made more tempting because war is in the air.
Duke of Wellington, God bless him.
Oh, men. But who's that?
That's General Tufto. He's a cavalry commander. Fine figure of a man, but a terrible wig.
Devilish fine mount, though. And look, there's Rawdon. He's Tufto's aide-de-camp, remember? Do you see?
Oh, yes, I see.
And Becky, too, right in the middle of them. Oh, she's a fine horsewoman, damn it.
Yes.
Emmy, where are you going? Isn't it a comfort that Rebecca's come? You'll have her for a friend. We can get rid of that damned Irish woman.
Of course. Rebecca is one of my oldest friends. I'll be delighted to see her again.
That's the spirit.
In the event, relations are re-established from opposite sides of the Brussels Opera House, where Rebecca and her husband are sharing a box with General Tufto.
Becky, my love, there's Amelia, with a strange creature with a yellow thing in her turban.
That's Mrs. O'Dowd, I believe.
Oh. Who did you say that pretty little woman in white is?
Mrs. Amelia Osborne, General. And that handsome man by her side is her husband.
Oh, look! Captain Osborne has noticed us. Shall we acknowledge him?
Whatever you wish, Becky.
In that case, we shall invite him over.
I'll go.
Rawdon?
George, good to see you. I believe I owe you your revenge at cards.
You do indeed.
Tell me, has your father come round yet?
Not yet.
But he will?
Oh, yes. You'll get your money. If I don't win it back off you first, that is.
Who can guess the luck of the cards, dear boy?
Entrez? My dear Captain George, how good of you to come. General, this is my Captain George of whom you heard me talk.
Ah, yes. You didn't see much service in the late war, I believe, Captain George.
Well, not Captain George, you stupid man. Captain Osborne. So tell me, how is dearest Amelia? I needn't ask how pretty she looks, because it's plain even to the General. And there's your loyal but clumsy friend, Captain Dobbin, just like old times. Oh, my goodness! Dear Mr. Joseph Sedley, eating ice. Oh, he seems to enjoy it. General, why have we not had any ices?
Why didn't you say you wanted ices? Shall I go and fetch you some?
No, let me go. I entreat you.
Well?
You know, General, I think I should go to Amelia's box and greet the dear sweet girl. So, Captain George, will you give me your arm? Au revoir, General.
I don't think the General was very pleased.
It's not good for him to take me for granted. You know, Captain Georgie, I do believe marriage has made you handsomer. I could see the ladies' eyes devouring you from their boxes.
Should I return the compliment?
It's not a compliment, Captain Cupid. It's the truth. Amy! My dearest darling!
Becky!
Dear Captain Dobbin.
Mr. Sedley.
Oh, and look, I do believe we already have the attention of the General's opera glasses. Oh, Emmy, how delightful to see you. And you, Becky, you're looking lovely.
Why, thank you.
George, that woman's a humbug. Last night she was definitely making eyes at you. Amelia was quite upset. What's her game?
Your trouble, William, is that you ain't a man of the world. She's the nicest little woman in England. And I admire the way she's got tufto round her little finger.
I'd almost feel sorry for her husband if he wasn't planning to fleece you again at play.
Why are you and Emmy so down upon the Crawleys? When, by God, they're easily the most entertaining people in this whole damn town.
You know, George, Emmy looks unwell, moping over that piano. When we were all together at Brighton, I did begin to think she was doing me the honour of being jealous.
Jealous? Of you and me?
Isn't it absurd? But then, you see, when I first knew Amelia, she had so much and I had nothing. And you, I recollect, stopped me marrying fat Mr. Joseph. Though, of course, as it turns out, you did me the most immense favour.
I'm happy to oblige.
You're always obliging. Maybe she's scandalised because Rawdon and I and the General live together. But how could we, with our limited means, live at all without a friend to share expenses? And do you suppose Rawdon is not big enough to take care of my honour?
Does it need protecting?
Only from temptation, Captain Cupid. But enough.
On the 15th of June, 1815... a ball is given by the Duchess of Richmond, destined to go down in history. Only the privileged gain admission. So George is mightily proud of gaining invitations for Amelia and himself.
Come on, Emmy. Don't look so scared.
But I don't know a single soul.
Dobbin will be here, and the Crawleys.
I think I'd like to sit down.
Look, there's a bench. There. Now, you can amuse yourself or watch the world go by if you wish.
But, George...
Come on, Emmy, enjoy yourself. I intend to.
Just so long as you don't go near the gaming tables.
Don't cling so. I'll see you anon.
Nobody notices Amelia's appearance, but Mrs. Rawdon Crawley's debut is particularly brilliant. She arrives very late, her face radiant and her dress perfection.
Amelia, my dear, why are you hiding away?
I don't know anybody.
Don't be absurd. But, my dear, what has your hairdresser been up to? Really, you should have asked my advice. And where is dear George?
I'm not sure.
Gambling, I expect. He's a wicked boy. I seem to see him everywhere. He's at all the parties.
Why don't you come with him, you little careless creature, instead of moping at home with that Captain Dobbin? I dare say he's très aimable, but how could one love a man with feet of such size? Your husband's feet are darlings. He's quite my favourite partner.
Evening again, Mrs. Crawley.
Where have you been, you wretch? Here's Emmy crying her eyes out for you.
Emmy, what have you been saying?
Becky, I never...
So, Captain, are you coming to fetch me for the quadrille?
If you'll honour me.
Of course. Emmy, my dear, will you look after my bouquet and sure.
Amelia!
Captain Dobbin.
I saw you sitting alone, and I've taken the liberty of bringing you some refreshments. You're not upset?
No. No, there's nothing the matter, really. You don't dance?
Me? Oh, no.
All the same, I don't want to keep you from your friends.
Very well. Are Rebecca Short and Flower still there?
They're on that bench.
She's going very soon. Here they are.
I'd like to go now, please.
Hang it, Emmy. The night's young.
Oh, here comes the gallant captain.
Your shawl, Mrs. Crawley, and your bouquet.
And there, among the flowers, coiled like a snake, is a note. Rebecca's eyes catch sight of it at once. She is used to dealing with such things.
I do believe you've added another bloom to my bouquet, Captain.
Then I hope you will savour it.
Becky!
But here is my husband. Good night, Captain, and sweet dreams.
From a distance, Amelia has only seen the public part of the bouquet scene. George's behaviour is no different from what it has been 20 times in the last few days. But now it is too much.
William! William!
What's the matter?
Take me home, please. I'm not well.
Of course, at once. Take my arm, this way.
George, meanwhile, heads for the tables. There he plays on, laughing loudly and wild with spirits. Sometime later, a pale and grave Dobbin finds him there.
Ah, it's Dob! Come and drink!
George, please don't drink any more.
Oh, rubbish. This is the most excellent champagne. Try it.
George, listen. The enemy is on the move and our left is already engaged. We are to march in 3 hours. We're to what? You need to get home. To say goodbye to Emmy.
Dawn faintly streaks the sky as George sits down and writes to his father. Hope, remorse, ambition, tenderness, and selfish regret fill his heart. He could die in hours.
In spite of all, your loving son, George.
Why has he disobeyed his father, who has always been so generous to him? And then Emmy. He has squandered all his little capital in a few weeks. If anything happened, what will be left for her? Why has he married her? Why has he treated her so badly?
George?
Emmy, I thought you were asleep.
I was trying to sleep. I didn't want to disturb you.
God bless you, Emmy. Have I been so very awful a husband?
George, what are you talking about?
We're about to march.
Oh, no. Not yet.
I was going to steal away and leave you a note. I wanted to tell you that I'm sorry. And if I come through this, I will return a better man. I have to go. Goodbye, Emmy.
Hold me for a moment. Be sure to come back to me. Please.
I promise. Don't cry, please. Please.
The sound of the bugle is soon taken up throughout Brussels. It is answered by the drums of the infantry and the shrill pipes of the Scotch regiments. And so the whole city awakes to the sounds of preparations for battle. The The English army is ready to march against Napoleon. The outcome is uncertain. The fates of nations are at stake. Meanwhile, Captain Rawdon Crawley takes leave of his wife in wholly characteristic fashion.
Now look here, Becky. You know I'm no coward, but I'm a pretty big target for a shot. If it brings me down, then I shall leave one and perhaps two behind me whom I shall wish to provide for, as I brought them into the scrape.
Well, as for two, of course it's possible.
And I damn well hope so. A son and heir is what I've long wished for.
Oh, dearest Rawdon, you look so wonderful when you're trying to be solemn.
Well, this is cursed solemn. So, I've had a pretty good run of luck at the tables here, and here's £230. Well, I've got 10 napoleons in my pocket. That's as much as I want. And if I'm hit, why, you know I cost you nothing.
So you keep saying.
By the way, I shan't take either of my horses. I'll ride the General's grey charger. It's cheaper. And I told him mine were both lame. If I'm done, those two ought to fetch you something.
Oh, don't worry, Rawdon. I can take care of myself. Just be sure to come back safely. You have to go.
Now don't cry now. God bless you, Becky, and all that sort of thing.
All over the city, soldiers leave their wives and mistresses. For George Osborne, racked with guilt over his neglect of his wife, it is almost a relief to pull himself away from a weeping Amelia. As day breaks, Becky, schooled by experience, makes a full inventory of her material assets.
Dressing case, pins, rings, cashmere shawls, Leroy watch, present from Rawdon, Breguet watch, a present from dear General Tufto. I'm so glad I mentioned to them both that my own English watch was broken.
No man in the British Army, not the great Duke of Wellington himself, is more cool or collected in adversity than Mrs. Rawdon Crawley.
Ah, a draft for £20 on George Osborne's banker. Well, I did try to warn him against gambling with Rawdon. Maybe I should pay a visit to poor little Emmy. And on the way, make sure I get this draft cashed.
Dressed as neatly and smartly as usual, Becky goes across a city in turmoil to see her dear friend, Amelia Sedley. In the antechamber of her friend's residence, she finds Amelia's brother, Joseph.
Why, Mr. Joseph, how delightful to meet you.
Mrs. Crawley.
I hope you're not preparing to go and fight too.
No,
I ask because if you go, who will be left in Brussels to protect us poor women? And how cool and collected you look when everybody else is frightened.
Poor. After all, we are 3-1 against any force Boney can bring into the field. He must. He shall be crushed.
I'm sure you're right. So how is our dear little Emmy? It must have been an awful, awful parting.
So I believe. But now I am here to protect her. And I don't need Captain Dobbin to lecture me on the subject.
Thank heaven your heart is true to your sister. Even though 2 years ago it was false to me.
It's not fair.
No, be calm. I do not bear any rancour at your betrayal. You may still come to make amends. Just tell me, where is Emmy?
She's in her bedroom.
Come in.
Dearest Amelia.
Rebecca?
What's the matter?
Why are you here? Haven't you done enough?
I only came to see if I could... if you were well, and...
How about you? Are you well? I dare say you are. You don't love your husband.
Emmy, I adore him. Rawdon is a dear.
No. I've seen how you are with him. So tell me, Rebecca, did I ever do you anything but kindness? When you were quite poor, who befriended you? You saw us in those happier days before George married me. I was all in all to him. Or would he have given up his fortune, his family, as he nobly did to make me happy?
I don't deny that, Emmy.
Then why did you come between my love and me?
Emmy, I never...
His love was everything to me. You knew it and wanted to rob me of it. For shame, Rebecca!
Amelia, I protest before God, you go too far. I swear I have done my own husband no wrong.
Oh, yes, but have you done me no wrong? You did not succeed in seducing George, but you tried. Ask your heart if you did not. Yet George came back to me. I knew he would. I prayed that he would. I've had him for but 6 weeks, Rebecca. You might have spared me those, but no, from the very first day of our wedding you came and blighted it. So I suppose now you've come to see how unhappy I am.
Rebecca has never experienced such spirit and volubility from Amelia. She is silenced. She is even moved. But all the time she cannot stop thinking. Did Amelia see the note he gave me in my bouquet? Has she any notion how far things went?
We talked last night before George went away. He sat there on that very sofa. No, don't touch it. My arms were round his neck, and we prayed the Our Father, and he promised to come back to me.
He will come back, my dear.
He will. I know he will. Look, this is his sash. Isn't it a pretty colour? Go now, Rebecca, please.
How do you find her?
There should be somebody with her. Maybe I should talk to Mrs. Major O'Dowd.
Would you? What's that?
Well, I may be wrong, but it sounds to me like cannon.
Cannon? Who's cannon? Where?
I'm sure we'll find out in due course. We're but a few miles from a battlefield.
Yes.
Presently, it seems as if the whole population of Brussels has rushed into the streets. And there, Jos Sedley, desperate for news, joins them. The field that is to be Waterloo is, after all, but a dozen miles from the city. Joseph returns home to find Peggy O'Dowd by the side of a sleeping Amelia.
Mrs. O'Dowd, hadn't you better get Amelia ready?
Why? Are you going to take her out for a walk?
I'm off to Ghent. Everybody's going. Don't you know what they're saying? Emmy, wake up!
George, are you there?
There, George. There, my dear. Listen, both of you. Napoleon has cut the Allied armies in two, and he's marching straight on Brussels. He will overpower the English and be here tonight. I can feel my Belgian servants eyeing me as if I was already soup. We must start in half an hour.
I'm sorry, but I don't move till my husband, the Major, tells me to.
You don't...
You may go if you like, Mr. Sedley, but Faith, Amelia and I stop here.
Joseph?
Amelia, listen to me. Are you coming?
Peggy speaks for me. I won't move until George returns.
With the arrival of the French expected hourly, people flee, and horses and carriages are in desperately short supply. Joseph contemplates escape on foot, but even fear cannot render that ponderous body so active. Finally, he seeks assistance from one of the few people left in Brussels with two good horses to their name, Mrs. Rawdon Crawley.
Why, Mr. Sedley, how good to see you again. I've just been speaking to dear Lady Bareacres.
Yes?
You can imagine how much it upset me to refuse my mounts to a woman who has always ignored me. Poor Lady Bareacres. Not to be able to get horses and have all those diamonds sewed in the carriage cushions.
But you still have horses.
Oh, yes. But they were never in harness. Bullfinch would kick the carriage to pieces if you put him in the traces.
But is he quiet enough to ride?
As quiet as a lamb and as fast as a hare.
Do you think he's up to my weight?
With or without your sister?
She refuses to leave.
Well, the fact is, I will sell both or neither.
But
They were left to me by my dear husband, who instructed me as a matter of duty to get the best price I could.
I'll pay anything.
So you'll match Lady Bearacre's offer and more?
Yes. But what about you? Aren't you leaving?
If the French do come, what can they do to a poor officer's widow? Particularly one who speaks French.
Mrs. O'Dowd! Mrs. O'Dowd!
Why, it's Tom! Tom Stobble!
A feeble voice calls to Peggy O'Dowd from the straw of a cart laden with wounded. Ensign Stubble, who had marched out of Brussels so gallantly 24 hours before, has fallen, speared by a French lancer, but still bravely holding the regimental flag. Amelia and Peggy watch in turns. Amelia is desperate for news, but knows better than to pester the wounded lad.
You see, we all thought Major O'Dowd was gone when his horse was shot from under him during the charge, but when we got back, he was there seated on the carcass drinking from his flask of whiskey. But it was Captain Dobbin who cut down the lancer who speared me. Even though he was wounded himself, he made sure I was sent back here. And he made sure I was to tell you, Mrs. Osborne, that your husband was unhurt and well. There's not another officer in the army like Captain Dobbin.
Yes, but you're sure Captain Osborne is safe?
Oh, yes.
I can't stand it anymore, Emmy. You must come with me.
Without my husband, Joseph. And with Tom here needs nursing.
So you won't come?
No, I can't. I won't.
Goodbye, then.
All the day, from morning till past sunset, the cannon never cease to roar. The population of Brussels waits in fearful suspense. Then, when it is beginning to get dark, all of a sudden, the cannonading stops. As Tom Stubble falls into exhausted sleep, Amelia starts to pray for George.
Lord, he was alive yesterday. He promised to return. Lord, bring him back safely.
Against expectation, there has been a famous victory. The French are pursued from the field. But while darkness comes down on the field and city, and Amelia prays, George is lying on his face, dead, with a bullet through his heart.